this is Nikki Toyama-Sito, the Executive Director for Christians for Social Action, and your host for this episode of 20 Minute Takes. This week, we mourn the loss and we say goodbye to Ron Sider, our founder, and to join us on the show as we do a little bit of pausing, remembering, and being grateful for Ron, we are joined by Kristen Komarnicki, who's our Senior Director of Dialogue. Kristen, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
My pleasure.
Kristen, as we're thinking about Ron Sider, a little bit of his writing, his legacy, can you tell me a little bit about when was the first time that you met Ron, or when did you encounter his work?
Well, I was a sociology major at Wheaton College in 1980, and I remember reading his book, which I think came out in 78, so it was pretty, or 73.
So it was a hot bestseller at that
point? It was hot off the press, and it was very compelling. I think I've always been drawn to things that are holistic and that call for sort of wholeheartedness, and Ron was nothing if not wholehearted. So I read the book, and I was really...
And this is Rich Christians in an Age of Hunger?
Yeah, that is really his pivotal work, I think, that attracted the most attention over the years. And that led me to start considering going into the Hunger Program, which was an overseas global poverty effort program that was run out of Wheaton College at the time. Yeah, I didn't end up going into that program, but that was my first encounter with Ron. And then many years later, in 1997 or 98, I found myself living close to Philadelphia, where Ron was working at the seminary, and discovering that Evangelicals for Social Action, which it was called at the time, had a very holistic view of faith, and realized that that was something I was really yearning for, wanting to live my faith more than just sort of warming a pew on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And when I found out that there was a job opening there, I applied for it. And that's when I first met Ron face to face and discussed the possibility of coming on as an editor to Prism magazine at the time.
And do you remember your first impression of Ron from that face to face interaction?
Yes. Very fatherly. You know, he was the generation of my father, and also just very kind and very down to earth. Ron, even though he has a lot of degrees and accolades and credentials and experience and books to his name, he always felt so approachable, and I always felt very much at ease with him.
Yeah. I mean, I think your encounter with Ron, there's similarities. I remember reading Rich Christians in an Age of Hunger in the 90s when I was in college, and it really turning upside down what I understood it to mean to be like a faithful Christian. I think it just blew open whole categories for me about just everything that's outside of what happens on Sunday, I guess. And it introduced me to really... provocative pictures of what it means, like God's economics and what it means to be generous and not giving out of excess, but posturing your life for generosity. And I remember meeting him too. I had a similar experience of, I feel like I knew him through his writings and works first. And then, so when I met him face to face, I was struck by what a kind and open listener he was. How many questions he asked of me and other people when other folks, I feel like, and it was a surprising interaction that I had. So I think it was something that I noticed and made note of. When you think about kind of the quintessential moments with Ron, what is it that you think of?
I think of the times when I felt deeply convicted about something, covering a certain subject in the magazine or taking a particular approach, and that didn't sort of jive with Ron's worldview or his experience up to that point.
Yeah.
And seeing his disagreement or his curiosity, his questions or whatever, but really listening to me and seeking to understand and allowing me the space and the safety to explain why that was important to me and to describe my vision. And on numerous occasions, he trusted my my gut feeling about something, mm-hmm. even though it made him a little nervous. and I think, I mean, one of those things is the birth of the program that I lead, Oriented to Love. Mm-hmm. I had this vision for a dialogue across deep difference in sexual orientation, gender identity, and theology.
Yeah.
And he almost immediately sensed that it was the right thing to convene a dialogue.
Wow.
He was very dialogical. He yes. had crossed lines with, you know, he had been in interracial dialogue. He'd been in inter-ecclesial, I don't know if that's the right
yes.
word,
uh-huh.
Dialogue. And that was really important to him. Mm-hmm. So he sort of quickly caught that vision, but it made him a little nervous what it was going to look like. But he trusted the process. And the way I've put it is that he trusted the work of the Holy Spirit in my mm-hmm. life. And was always a great supporter and champion.
Wow. I love that. I love that picture of, he trusted the process and his own experience with dialogue, even though it was maybe, the topic was something that made him uncomfortable. Mm. I think one of the things I think about that I've been really grateful for is, when I hear the stories of Ron as he's interacted with different corners of the global church. And I think I just feel so grateful for the posture that he took so many decades ago and continues to hold of this posture of hospitality, a posture that really sort of divests of power in order to learn and to be taught by the whole of the global church. And I think it's just really striking to me. I feel like over the years, I've heard about the networks he's been a part of or been invited into it from the beginning. Like one of them is Infamet, which is this group of integrated, holistic missions folks, theologians, practitioners, and some of the work that he did in other of these global spaces. And I think I've just been very grateful that he had such a great presence, a very humble presence that I feel like is still something that folks from North America can learn from. But I think part of the way that he carried himself meant that so many interesting insights, so many powerful and prophetic voices were able to come forward, because he's a person who didn't take up a lot of space, but really like promoted others. And I kind of feel like the organization that we have now with Christians for Social Action is a little bit possible because he had that posture of leaving a lot of space for others to step in and to be fully present.
Absolutely. And, you know, you've brought up the theme of humility, which I think is very consistent in Ron's life. And I remember a time when I was just going through a hard time with my family and I opened up to him, and he could have easily just said, well, you'll get through it, or let me pray for you. But instead he shared something that was difficult in his own life, a time that he had struggled with his family life. And it just meant so much to me. I remember we were on the metro in DC, and just sort of his head hunched towards mine and very quietly explained what he'd been through and how the Lord had led him through it. And that just meant a lot.
Do you have any sense as to what you feel like you will take away from your experience walking alongside Ron for a while, whether it's professionally or personally? Maybe a little bit of what is the impact of Ron on you, your life, your ministry?
Well, I definitely think the idea of dialogue, the meeting of the minds, the open-hearted meeting of the minds, with always having the goal of greater connection with God and others, greater understanding of where God is leading us, just that humble submission and the sense that that is the right place to be, no matter what your life looks like, that is the right place to be, is just seeking God and seeking peace as far as it is possible for you to seek peace with others.
I think one of the things I appreciated, Kristen, that you had said is, you know, Ron had been up and down sick for the last year or so. And I know that you had chatted with him at different points. Do you have any sense as to how it was that he kind of came towards the end of his life, what his posture or his perspective was?
Well, his overall posture was always one of gratitude. He always looked back and said, look what I've gotten to do. I can hardly believe. And always just feeling incredible gratitude for what he'd been allowed to accomplish, who he'd been allowed to meet, the travels he'd been allowed to enjoy, the studies he'd been allowed to pursue. So I think that's the main thing, gratitude. And I know that he was really excited to meet his Lord and Savior. There was no fear in him of death. Mm. I think you are the one who told me that he hoped for 10 more years.
Yes,
because
that's right.
he was always working on the next thing, or maybe
that's
the next
right.
many things. But he really was unafraid of death. And that was inspiring to me.
Yeah. I think I appreciated I feel like he was always hopeful and always looking forward, but not in like a narrow or naive way. And he would talk about that he wanted 10 more years because he had some books that he still wanted, you know, to get out of him and onto paper. And I think I really appreciated how he still maintains so much hope. And I think in the justice space, having that kind of hope and a little hope and humility, I think is part of what helped him to endure for such a long time. Because I think some of the conversations I hear about what he had, you know, I hear about the debate that he had with Jerry Falwell, and I see some of the parallels of those conversations. And then, you know, decades later, I was like, oh, how much has changed in these conversations? And I sort of lament some of that. But I appreciate how much hope he had. And I think he had a lot of hope because he believed in Jesus, you know, and he believed in what it was that God was doing and renewing in our society. And I know at some points I would sort of borrow his hope. I'd come to him sort of saying, well, you know, what do you think of this? Totally expecting him to be like, oh, I know, it's terrible. And instead, I feel like he was someone who, as prophetic as he was, still had so much hope.
Yes, I saw that too. And I think he was somebody who took the long view, right? Because there were many moments that were very difficult. There
long
were many
view.
Things that he worked for.
That's right.
That he didn't achieve, and many things he hoped for that didn't materialize. And there was one other thing I thought of that I took from Ron, and that's his belief in Sabbath.
Uh-huh.
And I think that that is what fed his hope and that spaciousness that he had
yeah.
to keep going the good fight. It wasn't that he needed to prove himself by writing 10 more books or
right.
whatever.
Yeah.
It flowed out of his relationship with God. And I know that every summer, or maybe twice a year, he would drive up to Maine.
That's
and
right. His
he
house
and his
is Maine.
Bride, Arbutus,
yes.
would have these weeks of relative silence. There was no cell phone signal
That's
up there.
Right.
There was no internet.
Yeah.
And they would read, and he would love to fish. And I just always thought that that was a beautiful example of a true man of strength, knowing
yeah.
when to rest.
Yeah. No, you're right. He always talked about that cabin in Maine, right? And he'd be like, I'm heading up. You won't catch me for the next few weeks.
Very healthy.
What do you think, and I think this is the last question, you knew Ron professionally and kind of as a public person, but you also knew Ron as a person, as a human. What do you think are some of the things that were true about him both privately and publicly? Or what do you think are some of the common misconceptions? People perceived him as this, but actually, in his heart and at home, he was more like this.
Hmm. I think he was incredibly consistent. He was consistently generous. He was consistently humble. So I don't know that he was different at work or at home.
Mm-hmm.
I think the ways that he was misunderstood were, it's easy for people to write somebody off who's giving challenging exhortations, right? I know
yeah.
he was called a communist or an idealist.
Uh-huh.
And I think those things hurt a little bit anyway. And then when there were times when he couldn't, when he felt misunderstood by folks that he really respected, that those
mm-hmm.
were hard.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't see inconsistencies in Ron or differences, honestly.
Mm. I think one of the things, I think in his writings and in his speaking, he was very strong and he was very powerful. And I think of him having this really prophetic voice and really strong convictions about simplicity, about peacemaking, being, you know, kind of anti-consumerist, anti-militaristic. I think of him as a man of like really unwavering conviction, publicly. And then at the same time, I think that there is a way that he understood some limits of his own experience. So he, I feel like he never compromised on his conviction or his lifestyle choices or that sort of a thing. And then at the same time, I feel like he was always very like, hey, what is this generation saying about this? Or how is it that this is actually evolving and becoming a little bit different? And I think in society, usually that openness is seen as a weakness. But I think I saw it as a real strength or a real comfort, you know, that he held his convictions deeply and then also recognized conversations and things are changing and it's not his to comment on. So I appreciated that. As we're both mourning and celebrating Ron's passing, is there something that you feel particularly grateful for?
The way that this organization has shaped my faith and life tremendously.
Yeah,
I am not the same person I would be if I had not intersected with Ron Sider and his work. Mm.
I feel grateful for Ron. I feel grateful to witness his love for his family and for his kids. And I feel grateful to be someone who sort of sat in a chair in the same room with him and just had a chance to kind of talk and kick around different things. I think he was generous with his heart. He was generous with his insights. And he, the way that he cared about the world, I think to me, helped me understand better God's heart for the world and God's heart for people. So I just feel like there's so many ways that Ron broke down stereotypes or conceptions that would have allowed me to become a little cynical. He was kind of this embodiment that that just fed hope because he broke so many rigid stereotypes. So I think I'm grateful for that. Kristen, we're grateful for you and for your participation and what you've brought to this community here at Christians for Social Action. And in this episode, we're giving thanks and tribute to Ron Sider, our founder, who passed at the end of July. One of the things in our staff meetings, that as we close, we pray and we thank God for meaningful work to do in the company of friends. And I think this episode was a chance for us to pause and to reflect with gratitude on one of those dear friends, Ron Sider. "20 Minute Takes" is a production of Christians for Social Action. We're produced and edited by David DeLeon. I'm your host, Nikki Toyamasito, and the music is done by Andre Henry. You can find us on the web at christiansforsocialaction.org. Give us 5 stars, write a review, and share about the podcast with your friends.